Hello, everybody, and welcome to a sign-y-die episode of Policy Matters. I am Eric Allen, and I'm here with my co-host, Nicole Horn.
Hi, everyone. Yay, the session is over. For good and bad reasons.
these 40 days are usually with bated breath. We're glad it's over. The Senate and the House adjourned for the year at 12:16 a.m. This morning. We're recording this on Thursday morning, March 30th. And we now know what made it and what didn't, Nicole. We've been talking about it, for the last couple of months, it feels like. And yeah. We now, as a team, have our first Georgia legislative session under our belt. So let's chat the good, the bad, and the ugly. What's number one on your list that happened in the Georgia General Assembly this year?
Well, I was thrilled that SB 233, the voucher bill, did not make it across the finish line. Thrilled about that one. And this is a bill that initially would give students $6,000. That was raised to $6,500. In its original version, would have applied to all Georgia public schools, but was amended so that it just applied to students who attended schools in the bottom 25% of the state's accountability measure. But there's no fiscal note to help estimate the cost of this bill. And the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute pointed out over and over again that as they're looking at taking money away from our school funds, we are wrestling with an aging bus fleet, staff turnover, and skyrocketing state health benefit plan costs. So, this was a terrible, terrible bill that I'm glad did not make it.
Yeah, and some of the dramatics around that bill, it was one of the later things taken up by the House. So it cleared the Senate, was sitting in the House, all afternoon, and about, I would say, the 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock hour, it finally came up for a vote. And it was the last action taken before the governor came to address the House of Representatives. So it just had to be extremely awkward for the governor, who had been pushing this bill all day, trying to get people behind it, to see it go down in flames, then have to come in and address the group to say, "Hey guys, you're doing a great job this year." So it was one of the more dramatic moments of the night as well. I think we had a lot that went on throughout the night, but that was one of the more dramatic things. And if you listen to the debate, and it was really good to hear the debate, because some of the things that I didn't really realize about the bill, but a lot of the issues that were brought up were around access, and that a lot of the kids that this would be targeted to help, it just wasn't going to help. It was only going to hurt the people that were in the schools that, probably needed more funding. You're going to pull funding out of those schools to give it to a very, very small minority who may have access to a private school that they could go to. Not to mention that these kids will still have to go through all of the rigors of getting into a school. So it was a lot of things wrong with it. I'm glad that it failed, and I am pretty sure that it will be back next year in some form or fashion.
Oh, without a doubt it will be. Without a doubt it will be. We have to keep fighting this bill because it's like the one that will never die. And this is where we've seen Republicans come out against this bill. I think continuing to have conversations with Republicans who came out against this bill, make sure they are standing strong, and talk with them about how we can strengthen their schools.
Well, that's the thing. We can't do it in a vacuum, because we do have allies, especially in rural areas where they just don't have access to private schools. It's really not going to benefit them. And it's going to be viewed as mostly a metro Atlanta or urban suburban type bill, and which I don't think is wrong. So it'll be interesting to see how this debate goes forward. But what we do know is it will come back every year. There is some type of voucher bill in some form or fashion. And I think with everything going on with the presidential campaigns ramping up here soon, it's only going to get worse. So we just got to stay vigilant and see what's going on. But I'll tell you, my big disappointment, we talked about it a couple of times now, because I think they got this out of the way really early, but it's the attack on our trans youth.
Yes, I
think that is probably the low point.
Absolutely.
You know, for all the talk that our colleagues on the other side have for, you know, talking about their pro-life. I think that it is a disregard for individuals who choose or are different. It's an attack on them, and we've got to stop attacking those that just aren't 100% like us. And that's what this bill is all about.
Well, and if this is where we need to also continue to not just fight, but fund organizations that are working hard in this fight. And I'm going to shamelessly say that Georgia Equality, as a fundraiser, and on Wednesday nights in April, they are doing drag queen bingo at Atlanta Eagle. And Atlanta Eagle has offered to donate the proceeds of Wednesday evenings in April to Georgia Equality. So I am going to put that out there, and I'll be putting stuff on my Facebook page to remind people. But y'all, we need to keep fighting. We need to get people elected who can reverse this bill. This is not set in stone. That's for sure.
And for our regular listeners, I know last week we had talked to you about a rally that was going to be happening today on this bill. And shortly after we recorded, the governor, in a very, very shocking move, went ahead and signed the bill into law to kind of preempt any of the phone calls. I guess it was working. He was getting the phone calls.
I mean, I made my phone calls.
The pressure was on. And I think to quiet down the pressure, he signed the bill, which shocked me even. I was not expecting that move, especially to come so early. So that was the one for me that really is just, you know, kind of a heartbreaker for us. But you know, we talked about SB 233 that didn't make it across. We talked about 140 that did make it across. Some of the others that did make it that I think are just horrible pieces of legislation. One of them is the election funding bill, SB 222, I believe it is. And I'm trying to stop calling these by numbers because most people have no idea what these numbers are. It's just the elections funding bill, which basically prohibits counties from accepting funds, grant funds, to help put on elections. What this bill will do is say that if a private organization wants to give money to help elections in Georgia, they have to give it to the state elections board, and the state election board will decide how to split that amongst the counties. But if you don't think that's going to have an impact on elections and the way elections are run, and it really is going to hurt disproportionately the more urban the metro counties, the more urban, suburban areas, where it just, because of Senate Bill 202, the election bill from 2 years ago, because of House Bill 316 from 4 years ago, that most people don't even talk about anymore, the responsibility and the cost for running these elections with all of these unfunded mandates is just a huge burden for counties with a million and upwards of 2 million people in them, if you look at Fulton. It's ridiculous. It's difficult. And this will negatively have an impact disproportionately on not only urban voters, but voters who the majority of the House and Senate feel would not want to vote for them. So this is another clear case of voter suppression.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of Republicans don't like to hear the word voter suppression. They don't think we're suppressing the vote. But when you make it almost impossible for county elections to run smooth, and you make them go and beg for money from the state, and the state is the arbiter, the decider of who gets those funds, I can almost guarantee you it's going to lead to chaotic elections and a suppression of the vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, as we get into kind of changes in laws that that are harmful, let's talk a little bit about some of the criminal legal system bills that passed and one that didn't. So I know one of the two bills dealing with cash bail, SB 100, was placed within SB 440, which passed, and that bill was introduced to provide mandatory minimum sentencing for minors charged with gang recruitment. But now it also includes language from SB 100, which mandates cash bail for anyone with an existing bench warrant for a failure to appear for non-traffic related court dates in the past 5 years.
And I got to give a shout out to Senator McLaurin. Josh McLaurin did a phenomenal job debating that bill and really articulating all of the issues that this could cause with people who are now going to be, you know, involved in the criminal legal system in a negative way for just life events. I mean, sometimes people forget to go to court because they got a traffic ticket.
Yeah.
If they've got to choose whether or not to go to court or to lose their job, they're going to choose to go to work and not go to court, and may now have a bench warrant put on them that will result in a very minor offense, creating a cash bail situation that could even just spiral and make it worse. So it was just really give a shout out. Senator McLaurin did a phenomenal job of explaining the perils of that bill and why it was a bad bill.
Yeah. Well, one thing, though, I was relieved about is Senate Bill 63, which would have drastically expanded the crimes for which cash bail is required. That did fail to pass. So that's a good thing. So it's like we'll take the wins where we can get them, for sure.
And that one died in the House as far as an agree to the Senate, because I know the Senate took that bill up, correct? That was another bill that, you know, was pretty bad. And the argument on it was that, well, a judge can put a $1 bond if they choose to. And, you know, it puts it back in the hands of the judges, and they wanted it to be used as a tool to kind of out and shame judges who they feel may be weak on crime or not, you know, putting people in jail for being accused. And that's the one thing out of all of these bills that we're talking about right now with the criminal legal system. In this country, you are innocent until proven guilty. And we should not be putting such a high financial burden on individuals who are innocent, because this is pretrial. This is just on suspicion. It's an arrest. It's an accusation. This is not a conviction. And you're basically putting undue financial burden, which, as Representative Kennard said yesterday, debating some of these bills, it is an issue of criminalizing the poor, criminalizing on race.
Absolutely.
Those are really, really big bills. But you also look at what they did with the district attorney oversight.
Yes.
So that is going to the governor's desk, and it will it'll be interesting. I'm pretty sure that this will be challenged in court.
Well, because those are people who are duly elected officials.
Yeah.
They've been chosen by the people. And so to put in place a methodology to go around voters is ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous and it's disgusting, because this is an issue of where when we had a district attorney who did everything they could to cover up the murderers of Ahmaud Arbery, something like this was never discussed. But now that you've got a DA who wants to prosecute a former president for trying to overthrow and steal an election, you've got all of these acolytes who are lining up to say, oh, my God, these DAs are going wild. Well, if you're going to be tough on crime, be tough on all crime.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure if you're gonna, prop up a law and order president, then you need to make sure they abide by law and have order. And if not, we should have the DAs that have the courage to prosecute them. Whether it's the DA in New York or the DA in Fulton County, I applaud them for upholding the law and investigating and possibly bringing charges against someone who's done wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Full stop.
I'm going to jump back to another good thing that passed, and that is House Bill 129. And that's the bill that expands temporary aid to needy families, also known as TANF, expands access to pregnant women, and eliminates the TANF family cap, which I was thrilled to see some good things being done for the neediest Georgians. And they didn't get much, that's for sure. Like, missing from the budget, as an example, were funds to boost workers' pay in the Department of Children and Family Services above the $2,000 cost of living adjustment. So, like, and that's an area where, and I'm taking this right from the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute, that addition could have helped reduce staff burnout and turnover. So we're seeing like some good things. And I'm like, yes, for the good things. But God, so many things that where we're missing the mark or we're just mean. And let's call the trans bill what it is, evil. So.
Yeah, very, very mean-spirited, if nothing else. And you know, I've got a whole list of stuff here in front of me, Nicole, that didn't make it. And I think some of it was pretty good. I look at the addition to the last year's mental health bill, 1013. They had House Bill 520 this year, and it didn't make it. And the sad part, if you've been reading, if you follow the AJC and what reports have been saying, this bill basically got caught up in a inner chamber fight over Burt Jones wanting the lieutenant governor, Burt Jones throwing a tantrum because he's not allowed to build a hospital on his father's land. And in order to do it, he would have to have SB 99 pass, and the House refused to take it up. So his response was he refused to take up a mental health bill in the Senate. And I don't think this is getting enough attention. I hope over the next couple of months it does, because it is, for someone like me who is a huge advocate of mental health, an advocate of recovery, to have a bill held up by a lieutenant governor simply because he wanted a personal action is absolutely ridiculous. There are a lot of good people in Georgia who are not going to be able to get the services that they need the way they would have been if he had brought this to a vote in the chamber. And I just find it to be absolutely heartbreaking that we're not going to be able to get these additional benefits for mental health out this year. I think next year it'll come back.
Agreed. Agreed. But to your point, we shouldn't have to wait that long. So
no, we should. When you're sitting there and you juxtapose stripping trans kids and families of their rights, voter suppression, all these different things that you were willing to take up, but providing services for those in crisis or respite for family members who are trying to help a loved one get services, that just seemed like something not worth your time.
Exactly.
And that's disheartening. We also saw sports betting fail. I know last time we talked, the soapbox derby was hijacked and language stripped, and they were going to make that a gambling bill. That didn't happen. So looks like we're another year without sports betting. I think it's a huge revenue loss for the state. And I personally voted for it in committee when I was on economic development and tourism. I voted for it twice for online sports betting. Not a fan of horse racing, the casinos. Mixed bag, but the online sports betting, we're losing a lot of revenue in a year in which we saw a lot of weird austerity cuts and budget cuts in this year's
budget. Yeah, and you and I were talking before we started our podcast about the cuts to the university system in Georgia.
$66 million cut from the university, and 10% reduction in funds for Georgia Public Broadcasting.
And you look at that and are like, we are flush right now.
See, Nicole, that's where it gets really weird because, the budget and the governor, they also gave $1 billion back to taxpayers as a ploy to pay them off, in essence. And I'll say it was a campaign promise to pay people off to make them vote for Brian Kemp.
It
and
absolutely
now
was.
we're spending $1 billion to send $250 to each individual, but yet we're taking $66 million out of the education system, and we're taking another couple of million dollars away from public broadcasting, which does a huge service for our kids. So I find it to be extremely odd with this budget of, in a year in which all we've talked about is how high our revenues are, that we had any cuts. You had asked the question earlier, why do we think that is? I don't really know the why, but it just feels like it's some type of retaliatory, or it feels very Ron DeSantis, like they're going after somebody that disagreed with them. I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of it, but it feels a little slimy in this budget. But it was passed. The House brought the budget to a vote at 11:30 p.m., which was extremely odd as well, because they knew they only had 30 minutes to debate and pass it. So it's kind of like wait to the last hour and get that done. But the other thing that failed this year that I've got is Buckhead, the gift that keeps giving. I have no idea what's going to happen with that in the future, but once
I
again,
think
it
that
was
that is, I feel like that doesn't feel, where the vouchers feel like something that will never die. Buckhead, I think it will be back next year, but I think the fire for this is starting to simmer.
I think it's as long as the governor continues to come out and say that he's not going to be full-throated supporting the move, and rightfully so, because it comes with a lot of perils. There's a lot we just don't know about this City of Buckhead thing and how it would work out. But I think you're right. I think there'll always be these grumblings about it, but I'm not sure that it's gonna come back. It's kind of dead for now. And I know last night in one of the temples in Cobb County had their Unity Seder. They had their Unity Seder last night, and I'm sure it was hard to grapple with the fact that we could not get across the finish line, the anti-Semitism.
I that one, Eric, I don't understand. Like, we honestly had bipartisan support for this. This is just putting it out there for a vote. It's ridiculous.
Well, once again, I will say it over and over and over again. Republicans do things to you, Democrats do things for you. And this is a prime example of a Republican House and Senate who could not get there. Well, the House, I give them credit, they got it passed. The House was able to move it. The Senate, for some reason, felt it a robbery of their time to fight for defining anti-Semitism under the hate crime statute. That's all it would have done, is give our DAs, when you're attacking DAs and trying to have DA oversight, but you won't give them the tools to properly do their job, then it's a little bit of a mixed bag. So that's something that I hope it comes back next year. It'll still be in committee. It can be voted out of committee again. It can be brought to the floor of the House. It can go over to the Senate, just starts to process over, but it's not dead. The language is still there, and we'll just have to see. See what happens.
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. Well, I'm excited though that the General Assembly is done.
It's over.
I think Eric, I'm shamelessly going on vacation next week, spring break with my daughter. So,
Good for
y'all,
you.
if I think though one of our next conversations, let's get a few of our legislative friends on with us to debrief. A great analysis, great few months with some painful, awful highlights and a few glimmers of hope. So
Yeah, and over the next couple of weeks, and we're gonna probably scale back and start doing this about every 2 weeks instead of every week because it's not gonna be as much stuff. But keep in mind, over the next 40 days, the governor has to sign this stuff into law. Just because it passed doesn't mean it's over. So keep coming back. We're gonna be talking about what was signed, what was vetoed, what's next on implementation on some of this stuff. And I can tell you another topic that I want to really dig into now that we're in the off season of the Georgia General Assembly is what are we going to do about protecting our babies at school? We have got to have some real conversation. I'm actually recording this today from Nashville, at home with my mother, helping get some things done. It is just heartbreaking that we continue to have young kids, these are babies, shot while in what should be one of the happiest places for them at school with their friends, they're learning, they're being engaged, they're it is just absolutely heartbreaking. And so my heart goes out to the families of those impacted, but also families like mine. I have a first grader who just has a lot of questions. Is terrified. And quite honestly, once we get done with this, I may be heading over to the Tennessee State Capitol. A lot of kids here locally in Nashville walked out of school today, a lot of high school students, and are now, as we speak, marching on the Capitol in Nashville for gun reform. So once again, I think the youth are going to lead us to where we need to go, but I pray for their safety. I pray for everyone listening, for you and your families. And I think this is going to bring the debate back as it should for next session. At the federal level and at the state level, we need to do everything we can to make sure we protect our babies.
Absolutely. Well
So,
said. Well said.
well, Nicole, you have a great spring break. And everybody else, we will see you back in a couple of weeks on Policy Matters. Bye now.
Bye-bye.